رحم الله من قرأ الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام والتحية والإكرام على سيدنا ومولانا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ظنوبنا بالقاسم محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المنتجبين المنتخبين المعصومين الذين أطهر الله عنهم الرجس وطهرهم تطهيرا. ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين من يوم عداوتهم إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه الكريم وقوله الحق وهو أصدق القائلين. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إن الدين عند الله الإسلام.
Please recite salawat. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in the holy book of Quran, in the chapter of Ali Imran, says the only religion in the sight of Allah is Islam. I have been speaking in the tafsir of this ayah from the beginning, and today our topic is about Islam, the answer for the question of a modern man. To begin the discussion, there are a few things which we should know before we start answering these questions. We should understand, when we say we live in a modern time, we live in a modern society, everything is modern today, and religion is something which is old. And since we are living in a modern society, in a modern era, is it possible that religion, which is almost more than 14 centuries old, can answer our requirement in today's world? As we have already discussed about the different dimensions of human being, of different dimensions of insan, like what are the needs of insan? What are the need of human being? We have discussed that a human being not just have to fulfill his bodily requirement, but he has to fulfill his spiritual requirement as well. But when we look at the definition of modernism or modernity, there are two definitions for calling yourself a modern person. Being modern, or being up to date, or being a contemporary person, it means there are two definitions given for this word. For this terminology, there are two definitions. One definition of modern, being modern, is we have evolved ourselves and we have brought ourselves in today's world, and we don't have to use the old and traditional culture which we have been following. Like, we have to separate ourselves from the culture we used to follow. This is one definition. The other definition, it means the word modern, it simply means contemporary. Whoever is living in today's time is modern. Even some philosophers have spoken about, if a religion is being followed in today's time, it itself is a modern religion, because the people who are following this religion are living in a modern time. So any religion who is present in today's time, it's modern. But we have to discuss the other definition. Before answering the problems, we should examine the problem so that we could get a wider view of the problem. What does we mean when we say we are modern people living in today's world? What does this modernism is actually doing to us? When we say a particular person is a modern person, what do we mean? To answer these questions, we will begin from point one. When we say that we are living in a modern society, or any person is a modern, we mean, number one, he's getting an education from the new system, the new academic system. He's going through schools, passing his classes, going to university, college. If he is following this modern educational system, we call this person a modern person. Likewise, the industrial changes which occurred after 18th century in Europe, if any country following this pattern of changing the industrialization and changing the industrial system, anybody is following the system, the new system introduced by Europe to us, is a modern person. Then we move a bit forward. How this modernism is influencing the families. The modern family in today's world consists of only 3, 4, or maybe 5 persons. The modern family in today's world consists of only husband and wife and their children. The 3, 4, and 5 is actually the number of children. If they got 1, 2, or 3. Mostly, in the modern society, there are the number of children which they are having is not more than 2. And this is causing a lot of problem. Inshallah, we'll come later on this. So when we examine these things, When we try to understand what is modernism is, these are the things, the educational system, the industrial system, and the family system. One is related to your education, one is related to your place of work, the type of work we are doing, and one is related to our family, the culture which we are following inside the door of our house. So actually, this system, this modernism is trying to influence all aspects of man. Apart from this, of course, apart from the spiritual part. So, a modernism is trying to influence a person if he's in his early age going to schools and colleges, later on if he's working, and if he comes back to his home, this system is influencing his personal life. The problem here is the modern system is not giving you enough time to become social. The social work, that is why we have social workers. I mean, you don't need social worker. Every person, when Islam comes and gives us the teachings of Islam, then there is no such thing called a social worker. Everybody has to involve themselves in social activities. That is why if you see, there is a lot more sawab, there is a lot more reward for the social activities. If you're praying at home, you get the sawab, you'll get the reward for your namaz, you'll get the reward for the prayer you do at home. But if you are praying the same namaz in a masjid, in a musalla, where there are a lot more number of people, you'll get more sawab. You don't need a label for that, become a socialite. But in the modern society, they give you a label of a social person and make a separate entity from an individual. They give an identity to someone who is actually involved in social activities. They're making this another job to be a social person. They are trying to finish the society, because if you look at the, because this modern thinking, it actually started from the 18th century, when it was the time of imperialism. In Europe, there was French and British. There were Americans trying to get a hold of the countries, the colonizing, to influence on more and more on people, on the public. You have to break them down into small units. It is a lot more easier to control a small unit of people. It is a lot more easier to control a small group of people rather than controlling a whole country or a city or a state. If they will be in a country, they try to break it down. In today's world, if we see the Middle East, from all the northern Africa, what they are doing is dividing the countries even in a smaller country, smaller parts. Why they are interested in making Kurdistan? Why they are interested in making the South and North Sudan? Why they are interested in breaking Libya? Because it is a lot more easier to control a small country, because you can threaten them. But if a country is large enough, then they can stand their ground and they can face the imperialistic thoughts. So what they're doing is breaking the families, breaking the society and community in a very small part. When they will break it down to a very small part, it will be very easy to control them. And now, as I said, the modernism is actually targeting the three stages of a life of human being. One is the life of a student, of children, when they're going to schools and colleges. What they're doing is giving them so much of materials to study that they don't have time for anything else apart from their study. They don't have even time to play. Just look at them. They leave home early in the morning. 6, 7, 7:30, 7. What time they come back? It's almost 2 or 3. The half of the day is gone. When they come back, they got loads of homework to do. They sit and do their homework. After finishing the homework, they hardly get any time to rest. What they do while resting, they watch TV. You can't force them to, okay, come on, let's read something, some religious material. You know, after studying for like more than half the day, you can't expect them to read, even open up another book. They don't have time to do that. They give you projects, they give you assignments to do at home. Your children don't have time to even think what they're doing. They have turned into machines. That is why the another thing in industrialism, in industries, if you look at them, the more and more money has been put in those fields which are related to their physical activities, like engineering. Everybody wants to become an engineer. You won't find anybody talking in today's world is like he's doing masters in arts. If anyone you hear about, like, okay, somebody's doing MA in English literature, you'll say, are you jobless? I mean, you don't have anything to do it. Why are you doing MA in English? Why are you doing MA in history? Because these things have been portrayed as a very less important thing, because this has to do with your intellect. They don't want intellectuals in the society, because intellectual people raise questions. If you will use your intellect and start raising questions about the system, they don't want such people. So what they do, they put more and more money for becoming an engineer, becoming computer engineer, I don't know, electronic engineer. They put more money on this kind of things. Or in MBA. Because when you need engineer to develop or make something, you obviously need an MBA, a graduate who can sell these products. So actually, what they are doing is changing and controlling the educational system of today. They're trying to control everything. When they are children, when they are in their schools and colleges, they control, they take all their time by making them study more and more. Look at the size of the bags of small young boy going to a school. He's in his first class or second class in his primary, and he is carrying the school bag which weighs over 5 kilos. Are we trying to teach him, or are we trying to make him coolie or something? He's not learning anything. His brain is just continuously working to absorb all these material which is given to him. If you talk to him, just give him a spare time, like a 15 minute time. And if you talk to him something rational, something intellectual, he won't be able to answer. Like, why this chemical reaction is happening, he can't answer. He knows this is happening, he knows the formula very well. You can ask him about the cos theta, sin theta and tan theta, whatever, the formulas are there, your trigonometry, the algebra, everything. They have memorized everything. But if you ask them, where are you going to use this? They don't have any answer. Where are you going to use this physics? The speed, the distance, the time, this formula. They don't have time to even think about the way they're going to apply these education. This modernism is trying to influence so much on the children that what they're thinking is just, okay, I need to perform well and I need to get 90%. It is quite surprising how people are getting 99% in today's world. When we used to hear from our elders, they used to say, okay, 60% was like first division. Anybody got 60 is equal to 120 in today's world. On a serious note, when we talk to them as elders, they say, okay, I have studied till class 10. And when you look at them, when you look at their education, they are way more smarter than us. The education system they got, because that was not so much of under influence of modernism. But in today's world, you'll see a student is easily scoring in 80 and 90%. But when you talk to him, he don't have any idea what's going on. He's only interested in his books. And when he gets time to get out of his book, he's busy playing games on his mobile phone or PSP or PlayStation or whatever. When you ask a student, who's the president of the country? Who's the finance minister of the country? The general knowledge, which we call a general knowledge, unfortunately is not so general anymore. Before it used to be general, everybody needs to know it. But it's not general anymore. Because the modernism has not given you any time to think about general things. What I want to tell to my younger brothers is to just go through newspapers once a day at least. And if you get time, go through two newspapers, two different newspapers. to find out the different the views about same matter. When you go through two different newspapers, you'll find out that one newspaper has given different headlines for the news and the other one is giving different news headlines for the same news. When you'll read two newspapers, you'll find out the reality between the lines. Otherwise, you'll just following the same one line, one thinking, monopolistic thinking. You won't be able to find the different aspects. You won't be able to find out the reality which is hidden between the lines. They are telling the truth. I'm not saying they're lying, but they are telling half truth. You can't claim, okay, this news is truth. Yeah, this has been said. Yes, that has been said. But what the other thing has been said, that is not mentioned over there. So one part is educational system. We come to the industrialism, the modern industrial system. Every person who is working today, look at their timetable. They have to leave early, especially in Mumbai. I've been living in Mumbai for more than almost 2 months, and I'm seeing the timetable. Like early in the morning, when I got married in 2010, and when I came to Mumbai on the 1st of Jan 2011, and I had to leave my home early in the morning to grab a train, it was, I guess, 5 in the morning. January, 5 in the morning. In North India, that is like you should be sleeping that time. 5 in the morning, we had to catch a train. I went to the station and I saw people in tie and suits. And I asked my wife, where are these people going? Please recite Salawat. Five in the morning, I saw people in suits and tie, January. And I asked my wife, where are these people going? Are they going on a holiday or something? She said, no, they are going for the work. I said, it's 5 in the morning. So yeah, they have to travel 2 hours to get to the place of their work. So the modern industrial system is waking you up early in the morning and they want you at work. They don't want you to even give time in the morning to even read a newspaper, because the newspaper gets you your home at 7. And by that time you are at office. The newspaper which you are reading at home to get informed, to get the latest news, is actually 2 days old. Because you're reading it at the night of the next day. You're almost 36 hours late. And you're coming back from your office like 7 or 8 in the evening. When you're coming back, you're frustrated. You are tired. You don't have time. You don't want to even talk about it. You're so tired, you don't even want to laugh. You don't even want to smile at your family. Because you are so much under pressure. You're not happy that you just came back from the office. You're worried that you have to go back again tomorrow morning. You're worried about the work which is incomplete. You worried about, do you have to give them 100%. You have to get your target done by the end of the month. The modern system is trying to grab you by your neck and not letting you go away and think for a minute even. They're grabbing you. They're not giving you any time. So the problem is, a person who is, of children who is studying, a person who is even doing a job, he doesn't have a time to even think. When it comes to the family, the modern system is breaking the family down. In today's world, there is a family man who is earning for the family. He doesn't know what my family requires. It's not just the money. They need your time. If you married a woman, that woman in your house is not there to stay at the house and take care of your house. She is there for you. If you're not giving him enough time, if you're not giving her enough time, then what is she doing over there? And there is the facade, the corruption comes up. You're not giving enough time to your children. I see a lot of people working in the Middle East, in the Gulf, and they come back after 2 years or more than 2 years or 3 years, and they don't even have any connection with their children. They don't have any idea what my son likes, what my daughter wants. They don't have any idea about that. When they come and they want to, you know, express their fatherhood, like, I'm your father, I am your sustainer, I'm giving you money to study, then they don't like that idea. The children don't like it, because he's in there when the PTM is going on. He's not there when the annual functions are going on. He's not there when your son is growing old. And you want to come and start giving orders, like, and telling them what to do and what not to do for the small amount of leave that you get for a month or two. So what is happening? Those families are getting separated from each other. The children, they don't have any connection with their parents. The husband and wife, they don't have connection with among each other. So when you don't even get time to even see your own wife and children, how are you going to make time to see your brothers and sisters and your parents if they're living even in the next alley? You don't have time to go there. So before raising questions about Islam, whether it can answer the modern requirements, we see that they don't have answer to the modern society itself. And as I earlier said, in the modern society, the families they don't have more than two children. They hardly have three. The percentage of having three children is very, very few. What is the problem of having less children? The problem of having less than two children is, as per the researchers, if you see, the United Nations says, if you want to make a culture continue and sustain for another century or more than that, you need at least 2.5 children on an average. You don't need a half children. I mean, between two families, there has to be 5 children. You can't have half children. So, to sustain that thing, to sustain that system, you actually need at least 3 children. So that there should be a complete family. Like, if a person is having a son and a daughter, that means their children will be having either an uncle or an aunt. They can't have both. They can't have an uncle and an aunt, because one of them is the father or a mother. They can even... Or in a system, if they're having both of them are daughters or both of them are sons, they're only having an uncle and an auntie. They don't have an uncle. So that is the problem. To sustain the culture, if you want this culture to sustain to the next century, there has to be at least 3 children in a family. And what is happening in the modern society, they are becoming more and more... They are separating themselves from the culture because they don't have any culture. They're developing a system where they are talking about single parenting. Single parenting is not enough. Giving food to a child is just making him live. That is not giving him your values, your culture. He can live wherever he wants. He can live in an orphanage. But if you want to give him a culture, if you want to give him a values, we have to give them a family. But in the modern society, we don't have that. We are breaking it down to the nuclear families. We are breaking it down to the smaller families. Look at the sizes of the house. The culture sustained, the Islamic culture sustained for the 14th centuries. It is because of the culture which was introduced to us. The moment we started changing and adapting new culture, we are getting in lot of problems. So before questioning that whether Islam can answer our requirements, you have to see the problem is in your system. Even if you're living in a modern society, Islam is answering every question. Every question you ask, there is a problem. There is a solution for it. Whether you live in a in nuclear system, whether you live in a joint family system, there is always a solution for it. Even if in today's society, in the modern society, I'm not talking about the mu'mineen, I'm talking about the modern society. If you look outside the religion of Islam, they're talking about living relationships. And the huge number of people are interested in that thing. Why? They don't have to share the responsibilities. They don't have to share their problems. What they're doing is just living in one roof. Living under one roof. And trying to fulfill each other's requirement. Physical requirements. Even for that, Islam had the procedure. Although, because of what happened during the second caliph, the temporary marriage system is not looked at it in a very good thing. Everybody is just pointing finger towards us. Okay, look at that. They have this kind of system. There is no harm in having this kind of system. This is the... Even the modern society is willing to take that system. And today, in Indian court, when this system was introduced, like the people wanted, some of the couple want to have a, they want to live in a living relationship, what does the Bombay court said? Yes, you can go on and have a living relationship, we don't have any problem. All you have to do is come and give a written affidavit, give us an application to the court and get it stamped. Why? Why there is this application? So that when there is any problem, this application will help us to sort this problem. That is what the Islam is saying. All you have to do is to recite the Sira. So that if there is any problem in the future, you can sort it out. The Islam is giving you even more and more modern solution for your problems. You don't have to share the responsibilities. Everybody has a physical requirement. You can't say that nobody has, okay, I don't have a physical. No, you're lying if you're saying that. Everybody has that. So everybody, for every answer, for every problem, there is an answer for Islam, in Islam. Sometimes, before answering, I mean, why do we always put ourselves on the defending end? Why do we always have to defend ourselves? It's time that we start asking them questions. We are always trying to be mazloom. If another person is asking questions, like why do you do that, why do you do this, why are we always defending our faith? Do we have any doubt in our faith? It's time that we should start asking them questions about their beliefs, about their culture, about their values. Why do we always have to answer them? If we look at the seerat of Aima, there are two types of seerah which is present in the seerat of Aima. One, when Imam used to get questioned, sometimes any Imam, this was a seerah Aima. Seerah in the, if you read the history of Imams, you'll find that there are two ways of answering questions. You'll find two ways. Sometimes, when an Imam is being asked a question, he replies with another question. And sometimes, when an Imam is being asked a question, he replies with an answer. Because the question, when it is answered by another question, is not to get the answer. Sometimes people ask us question, they don't want you to answer. They don't want your answer. All they want is to test you. They want to test you whether you have the answer for this question or not. Like during the time of our ninth Imam, Imam Muhammad Taqi alayhi salatu wa salam, he became Imam at a very young age, at the age of 9. According to some tradition, at the age of 7. He was too young. But the Khalifa at that time, Ma'mun, decided to marry Imam Jawad, Imam Muhammad Taqi, with his daughter. And rest of the Bani Abbas, they were against this marriage, and they were complaining to Mamun that, why do you want to marry your daughter with this child? He's just 7 years old, he's just 9 years old, he's too young. Why are you making him your Wali Ahd? The same thing he did with Imam Raza. Why are you making his your successor? Because you don't know about these people. You don't know about Ahl Bayt. He said, no, he's just a child, he's just a kid, he's just 9 months, 9 years old. He doesn't know anything. Mamun knew, he knew the family of Ahl Bayt. He had the ma'rifah of Ahl Bayt. But his desire overcomes his ma'rifah. So he said, okay, let's arrange a debate. We'll call him. If you can ask him a question, and if he couldn't answer, it's like a win-win situation for us. For Ma'mun, it was a win-win situation. If Imam Muhammad Taqi alayhi salatu wasalam couldn't give the answer, please recite salawat. If Imam Muhammad Taqi alayhi salatu wasalam couldn't reply, couldn't answer the question asked by these Bani Abbas, then he will be able to make these people, the Bani Abbas, happy. And if Imam couldn't reply the answer, then he will be happy that, look, I was making the right decision. He was very smart. He was one of the smartest Khalifa of Bani Abbas, Ma'mun. He introduced a lot of literature from the West. He did a lot of things. He was a very knowledgeable one. He was one of the knowledgeable Khalifa of Bani Abbas. So he arranged the debate into the court, and he invited Bani Abbas into the court, and he invited Imam to come over for the test. So the court was jam-packed. Imam entered the court and found a place to sit. He sat over there, and at that time Yahya ibn Aqsam was the chief justice in the court of Ma'mun. An old fellow, the smartest one among all of them. He was invited to ask question. He looked at Imam and he started thinking, okay, what should I ask this child? What should I ask this 9-year-old? Because he was thinking that he is going to ask question with a 9-year-old. He didn't have any idea that he is asking the question with the Imam, who has all the knowledge of this entire world. So Yahya ibn Aqsam asked a question. He said, what do you think about a person who is in ihram and he did a hunting? Because it's haram to do hunting while you're wearing the ihram. You can't kill an animal or insect or anything. So he asked a question. Let me tell you one thing. In the ihram, there are two things which is the most difficult one. One is the ahkam e hajj. It is most difficult thing to remember the ahkam e hajj. It is very difficult. That is why there is so many kafaras. Anybody going to hajj is ending up giving kafara, at least one. And the other thing is inheritance. These are the two abwab, two different things, which is the most difficult thing to solve in the fiqh al-islami. So he asked a question from Hajj. He said, what is the ruling for a person who is in ihram and he does a hunting? What should be the answer? An Imam asked him, as I said, in the seerah of Imam, you'll find two types of answering. One is with the question and one is actually the answer. Imam asked him, was the muhrim was inside the haram or outside the haram? Was the muhrim was in the ihram of hajj or in the ihram of umrah? Was the muhrim, he killed an animal who is a wild animal or a pet animal. Whether he killed an animal which lives in the sea or on the land. He continued asking questions. He asked 23 different questions from Ahiya bin Aksum. He got surprised. He got astonished. He didn't have any idea that this many questions can be raised from one question. Imam is trying to tell him, look, you're not asking me a question. You're not asking a question from a 9-year-old kid. You're asking a question from the Imam Waqt. He has the Imam of that time. You're asking a question from the Imam of the time. Don't look at the time, how old he is. And then Imam continued answering every single question. If the animal lives, if it's a wild animal, the ahkam is this. If it's a pet animal, the ahkam is that. If the muhrim is inside the haram, the ahkam is this. If the ihram is for hajj, the ahkam is this. He answered every single question. Then he said, okay, it's my turn now. I got one question. What is that one thing that it's haram in the early morning but becomes halal after a few hours? Then it becomes haram again after a few hours. Then it becomes halal again after a few hours. Then it becomes haram again. Then it becomes halal again. The Yahya bin Aksum, the chief justice of the court of Ma'mun, got surprised. So what kind of question is that? How is that possible? That one thing's become halal and haram, like every hour it turns halal, every hour again it's turning haram. What kind of question is that? The Imam answered, just look at the beauty of Imam. Look at the beauty of the knowledge of Imam. Imam answered, like if a person looks at the knees of someone else in the morning, it's haram. You can't look at someone else's knees even, because it's not mahram. But after a while, if that person buys that knees of another person, that's become halal. That is haram, turns into halal. After a few hours, if the man frees that knees, she's a free person now. She's not knees anymore. She's halal. She's haram to look at her. She's now mahram again. And after a few hours, if the person marries that free kanis as a free woman, she becomes halal. And after a few hours, if the person gives divorce to her, she becomes haram. And then if he does rujoo to her again, she becomes halal. So Yahya bin Aksum was surprised with the knowledge of Imam. So sometimes I was telling that the questions should be answered with a question. This is a seerah of Imam. But sometimes you'll find in the seerah of Imam that they're actually answering it. The question, whatever you ask, they'll answer the question. When it's been asked by Sahaba, the companions of Imam, their answer, because they are not testing the knowledge of Imam. They actually want to know the answer. But what we are facing today in our society, they don't want to know the answer. They're testing you. They want to know how much do you know about your religion. How much do you know about what your religion is saying about this thing, this particular matter, this particular thing. They don't want to know what's going on. They don't want to know. Otherwise, if they want to know, the questions are different than testing. They don't want to, they actually want to test your religion. That's why they question your religion. Because religion, in their faith, in their eyes, is a burden, is something outdated. But in our religion, in the eyes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when we look at Islam, it's not just something it is related to your prayers, but it is related to your every aspect of your life, whether you're living in a society, whether you're living in a family, whether you're working at home, whether you're working in an office, or you're working in a farm. Whatever you're doing, your answer you can find is from Islam. You don't have to give answer to everyone else. Why we are always answering them? I'm telling you, why don't you ask them questions? It's time that we start asking them questions. Why do we always have to defend our belief? We have been defending our belief for 14 centuries. It's time to tell them that we have a complete religion. We have a complete faith. We don't have to answer anyone else. So the knowledge which we need, and we have to learn more and more about our religion. All you have to do to understand the beauty of Islam is just to go through one book. That is the Islamic laws, the Tawdihul Masail. Just go through the content of it. You don't have to read everything. Just go through the content and you'll find out what kind of answers have been given for the different questions and regarding the different topics. Some of them we don't even find it today, but there are questions. There are answers for those questions. The Islam gives you answer before the question arises. If you look at the books, you won't find an English translation of the original fiqh books. The debates in there, you sometimes feel like, why are we even debating about these things? Like, in the book of inheritance, you will find the answer for questions like, if a person married to two women, and his actually, the first woman he married was actually the second wife of another person, she's having a child from that husband, so what will be the hukm, what will be the ruling for the inheritance of that daughter? That thing you won't hardly find in these days. But there is answers for that. What if their grandfather had three wives and all of them had, I don't know, five children each, and they have to decide how they're gonna divide the inheritance of that grandfather? There is an answer for that. But if you ask this question in today's court, the court will get confused. Who's the right owner, right inheritor? But there is ahkam for everything. Like, who is supposed to be the right inheritor? There is one masala, it was asked, like in today's world, if a person, if a lady becomes pregnant from the husband who has been passed, because the technology, you can later on, you can put it with the test tube, babies are there. If husband is already dead, what will be the hukm of the child who is born after 2 years of the death of his father? If you ask that in a court, the court will get confused. But there is hukm for that in the ahkam. He is the rightful owner, he is the rightful inheritor of his father, like every other children. It's as simple as that. So, for the complex questions, which we feel, this is very complex, how are we going to answer that? There is a simple answer for everything. All you have to do is go through that small book. All you don't, even if you don't have time to go through books, just download the application. It's 2 MB or 5 MB. It won't take a lot of space. At least less than Facebook. Please recite salawat. The problem is we don't have enough knowledge about our religion. That is why we are scared of answering them. We are worried. Whenever even I am scared sometimes. When somebody comes and asks, like, Maulana, I have a question. The whole fiqh book goes into my mind. I just have a flashback of everything. Like, I'm worried of what she's going to ask. And he ends up asking a very simple question. Why? Because we don't have enough knowledge about the questions which we should ask. And the problem is, we are doing the same thing which the people at the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen did. Amir al-Mu'mineen is saying, Saluni, Saluni, Qablan Tafqiduni. You can ask me whatever you want. I will answer you before I leave you. And people end up asking him, can you tell me how many hair do I have in my head? What Imam is saying, I know the more ways of heavens than on earth. And we are asking him the numbers of hair. What good is going to do to you? Like in today's world, a friend of mine,
asked me, what was the name of sword of Hazrat Abbas in Karbala? I mean, what good is going to help you with that name if I knew even the name of that sword? Or what was the name of the horse of Hazrat Abbas in Karbala? What color it had? I mean, what good is going to do it to you? This is the question we hear, unfortunately. And when we hear about the Saluni thing from Amir al-Mu'mineen, we say, look, what kind of stupid people were there? They were asking about the numbers of hair. I mean, we don't have to go 14th century back. We are facing this problem over here. In today's world, people are worried about more about the sword of Imam Hussein and the horse of Imam Hussein than Imam Hussein himself. The mission of Imam Hussein. The message of Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein didn't kill himself to become martyr and get famous for his horse. No. He killed himself. He got martyred. He gave his life, his whole house, for the sake of Islam, to save the Islam. All we need to do is to understand the message of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. We are here in the month of Muharram, and Imam Hussein is in Karbala. Today, when Imam Hussein is in Karbala, when Imam Hussein left Mecca to get to Karbala, to get to Kufa, and he got stopped in the middle of the way by Hur ibn Yazid al-Riyahi. Hur stopped him, and the condition of the army of Hur was so bad that every person was so thirsty that they were about to die. And Imam Hussein gave every last drop of his water which he was carrying with him. To whom? To the enemies of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The army was there to fight with Imam Hussein, to battle with Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. But Imam Hussein didn't differentiate between them and us, themselves and the forces, the army of Hur. They said, they are also human beings. Let's quench their thirst. The last person in that army was so weak because of the thirst that he couldn't even able to take the water in his hand and drink. Imam Hussein fed him, gave him the water from his own hands. This was Imam Hussein. When Imam Hussein wanted to leave that place, Hur came forward and grabbed the horse, and Imam Hussein said, "Faqalatka ummak," may your mother sit in your grief. And Hur, look at the beautiful reply of Hur. He said, if your mother was anyone apart from Sayyida Zahra Salamullah alayha, I would have been replied to you. I would have replied to you, because it is a disrespect in Arab to call someone with the name of his mother. He knew that he is the son of Zahra Salamullah alayha. He is the grandson of Prophet Muhammad Salawatullah wa Salamullah alayhi. He knew him. And that was the time Imam Hussein was trying to wake him up. He wasn't cursing him. He wasn't telling him to what actually your mother grieved for you. But he was trying to wake him up. That one sentence woke up the Hur ibn Riyahi. And during the time, on the 9th of the Shabi Ashur, Hur is walking in his tent. He's worried. His son comes to him and asked his father, what is wrong with you? Why you look very worried? Why are you walking here and there and just worried? Hur replied, I see myself between hell and heaven. I see myself between the fire of hell and paradise. He said, what up? Why are you so worried? Hur replies, if today there will be a war, I'm not sure whose side I'm going to take. I don't want to go to the hell. I'm going to face Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi. I'm going to face Bibi Zahra salamullah alayhi. He decided, it is because of me that Imam Hussein is in Karbala. He wanted to repent his mistake. He asked his son to tie his hand from the back. He asked his son to put a cloth on his eyes. He wanted to close his eyes. And asked his son to take me to the Imam Hussein. And his son, when he was leaving, he said, "Why, father, when we were in hell, you wanted to keep us with you, and when you're leaving the hell and you want to go to the Imam Hussein, you're not taking us." Imam Hur takes his son and one of his slaves to Imam Hussein. His hands are tied from the behind, his eyes are shut, and all of his son is taking his Hur ibn Rihahi to Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam. On the way, his son shouts, "Allahu Akbar." Hur asks, what is happening? Why are you saying takbir?" He said, "I see that Ali Akbar is coming forward." He starts crying. Hur said, let's go a bit faster. He started moving faster. Then again there was a takbir. He said, "Allahu Akbar." He said, "Hur asks, what is happening?" He said, "Abul Fadl Abbas is coming forward." And Hur said, "Please take me to Abu Abdullah. Please take me to Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam." When Hur was moving forward, his son again said takbir, "Allahu Akbar." What he said, "What is the matter now?" He said, "Imam Hussein himself is coming to welcome you to come to his tent." Imam Hussein came and hold Hur and grabbed him and said, "Ya Hur, you are welcome in our side. You are welcome in the camp of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam." He said, "I don't have even a drop of water to welcome you." It was a tradition in Arabs, when there was a guest, they used to give them water. But Imam Hussein didn't have a single drop of water to give to Hur. Imam Hussein said, Ya Aba Abdullah, please give me permission. Please give me permission. I want to go first. I want to sacrifice my life for you." He said, no, you are my guest. Oh, said, "Okay, if you don't want me to go for the fight, if you don't want me to go to the battlefield, let me send my son." Yeah, Imam Hussein gives him the permission. His son goes and fights. And when he comes down on the plain of Karbala, he's injured, he's bleeding, he's calling his father. His father wants to go to his son. Imam Hussein stops him and said, "No, Hur, it is makruh for an old father to go to help his young son and go into the and see his son in bloodshed." Imam Hussein goes and helps the son of Hur ibn Riyahi. I would like to ask one question, Mawla, when after some time Ali Akbar will be on that same plane, how will you be able to carry Ali Akbar from the plain of Karbala to your camp? وَسَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلِبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ إِذًا بِقَضَائِهِ وَتَسْلِيمًا لِعَمْرِهِ